Brewers lose to Pittsburgh 2-1. Cubs lose to the Phillies 9-6. White Sox beat the Angels 4-3. It's a morning game for the Brewers and Pirates, 11:35 in Pittsburgh. Cubs are off. White Sox host the Angels in an afternoon game. Thursday night football, Dallas and the Giants. Today's forecast, sunny and mild with a high of 75. The numbers right now, wind is calm. Sunshine was 63 degrees. Racine, 60 this morning in Kenosha. For WGTD News, I'm Dave McGrath. 10 past 8, the morning show with Greg Berg is next.
And we welcome you to the Thursday morning show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. A little bit later in the hour, we're going to be hearing from Brian Schottler, a fine Carthage College alum who is now enjoying a very busy career as a church musician and organist, who's going to be playing a recital this Sunday afternoon at St. Mary's Lutheran Church as part of their 150th anniversary celebration. We'll get to Brian a little bit later. We're spending most of the hour today with a member of the faculty at the University of Wisconsin-Parkside, Dr. Jay McCroy, Professor of Cinema Studies in the Department of Literatures and Languages. And more to the point for today's morning show conversation, he is also the new director of the Parkside Foreign Film Series. And this has been around for quite a long time. I think more than 40 years, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, many decades.
Yeah. So an incredibly valuable and treasured part of the cultural landscape here in southeastern Wisconsin. And yet another season of foreign films is about to get underway, with the first screenings coming up this weekend. So it's great timing for us to be able to speak with Professor McCroy about this film series and also what he teaches to the students at Parkside in the marvelous world of cinema. Dr. Jay McCroy, we welcome you to the morning show.
Thank you very much. It's really great to be here.
I'm glad we can have this conversation. Tell us a little bit about your move into this role as director of the Foreign Film Series. I mean, you tell me you've been at Parkside since 2001, and yet this just never quite worked into the mix of what you were doing.
No, never quite was able to get as deeply involved as I've been able to get, obviously, since taking over this summer from Joe Benson, who did a terrific job taking over for Norm Cloutier, who, of course, initiated the entire series. It's been a long time since I've been at Parkside. I mean, I started in 2001, and I've been a long time devotee and a long time attendee of the Foreign Film Series. I just had spent most of my time during the first, say, 20 years of my career publishing and writing and trying to establish myself as a film critic, and so that was taking up the majority of my time. But like I said, I enjoyed going to the Foreign Film Series and have been a long time devotee, a long time member, a long time attendee.
Mm. Well, this is great. Tell us a little bit about how you and Joe, in a sense, shared responsibilities for putting this current season together. From what you tell me, that was a bit of a collaboration.
Oh, absolutely it was, and it was great. Basically what we did, I can tell you the entire process. It's very simple and very democratic. I like it a lot, actually. Joe and I make a list of 30 films from countries around the world, obviously, and we get together and compare lists and try to create a master list of 30 films. And we choose films based on the receptions that they've received, based on awards that they've won, based on film festivals that they've been to, as well as obviously availability. The films have to be available to be screened, and so that plays a huge role in it as well. And once we have a list of 30 films, we send it out to the members of the Foreign Film Series. There's 800 members, and they vote, and we compile a list based on the votes that the films received, and then we just go down the list and try to book each one that we can.
Hmm. That is democratic.
Yeah, I really like that aspect of the process.
I know from the conversations I had with Professor Benson about this that indeed that whole matter of what films you can get and in what format and so on, whether or not they're dubbed or subtitles and that kind of thing. I mean, there are certain technical matters that need to be considered and probably weigh in the ultimate decisions that you make.
Absolutely, absolutely. You got to make sure they are in the right region for the region player and the DVD player, their Blu-ray player in this case that we're using. You know, those concerns come into play. So if you have, you know, you want to make sure that the discs work.
Exactly.
You know, that's one of the things we're doing right now is we're testing all the discs, make sure everything works, make sure everything plays, project it all up on the screen, make sure it all looks good, the sound is good, and we're ready to go.
Absolutely. And, of course, one of the things that we're talking about is a foreign film series at a moment in time when a lot of people can just, in the comfort of their living room, access a very substantial number of films, foreign and otherwise, and yet that is not the same experience as seeing a film properly projected in a theater. And I'm sure your word to the masses is that this is the best way to experience these films as their filmmakers intended them to be experienced.
Oh, absolutely it is. Absolutely. The big screen, big sound, I mean, those aspects really, you know, you can try to reproduce them in home theaters, but, you know, ultimately I think it falls short. There's also the experience of being together in the dark, watching these films projected up on a huge screen, and that collective experience, that film going experience, is one that I think is extremely valuable, and that gets lost a little bit when you switch venues. There's also, I think, different kinds of viewing practices, different behaviors that people conform to at the movie theater versus at home, where, you know, you can pause things and talk and go to the bathroom. You know, you can go to the bathroom at the movie theaters as well. I mean, they built those. But yeah, you can, you know, you can pause it, and it's a very different experience at home than obviously at the theater, which I love. I mean, I still go to the movies. I go to movies every week. I try at least to go, you know, once a week. It's one of my favorite things.
Absolutely. For those of you just joining us, I'm speaking with Dr. Jay McCroy, professor of cinema studies at the University of Wisconsin Parkside and director now of Parkside's foreign film series. And the current season gets underway this coming weekend. And we're going to talk our way through all of the films, and I forgot to count them. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 12. 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. Yep, you're right. 12. We're counting correctly. 12 films in all. And maybe before we even mention the films, we should also mention the ridiculously low subscription price. I mean, of just $30 allows you to see all 12 of these films.
It's the best money bargain, entertainment bargain going around, I think,
yep,
at this point. I mean, it really is. It's only a couple bucks per movie, plus you get guest passes. I mean, it's terrific.
Yeah.
I think it's worth the cash.
Absolutely. Extraordinary. So let's begin with this film from France that begins the foreign film series, a film titled Anatomy of a Fall. Tell us about this film.
Okay, Anatomy of a Fall actually is a film that has gained quite a bit of popularity since its release, and you know, has done extremely well in terms of international awards. It's a courtroom drama, actually, and I really enjoy that aspect of it, because the you know, most of the courtroom dramas that I think audiences in the United States see are U.S. courtroom dramas,
right?
And one of the things I found really fascinating about Anatomy of a Fall was being able to see how the court system works in other, you know, in other countries. And in this particular case, I believe Switzerland is where the trial takes place. The film is one that deals with themes of, you know, witnessing and what it means to witness the only witness to the fall. We discover is a visually impaired young boy.
What
did he really see? And of course the main female protagonist comes under scrutiny, and her entire life becomes, you know, an open book.
And we've mentioned it, but it It is her husband who
yes,
has
who
been
falls
murdered.
Out the window.
Right.
Maybe he falls out the window. I mean, that's right.
So was that an accident or was it a murder? And did she have something to do with it?
Exactly. Exactly. And that's the mystery that drives the entire film.
Absolutely. So this is from France again, titled Anatomy of a Fall, and now I understand. The
title.
Yeah, that title. That is so intriguing. So that will be this coming weekend. And maybe we should even here at the outset just mention that there are multiple opportunities to see each film over the course of a long weekend, ranging from Thursday evening through Sunday afternoon.
Yes, there's a Thursday evening screening at 7:30. There's a Friday evening screening at 7:30. And on Saturday, we have two screenings, one at 5 and one at 8. p.m. And then on Sunday we have a screening at 3 p.m. And the Sunday screening is free for students. So students can just, you know, show up with their, you know, student ID and in they go.
Wow, fantastic. So again, Anatomy of the Fall from France is this coming weekend. The following week, not the following weekend, but the next film in this season is, of all of them, probably the film that intrigues me the most, called Godland. And set in the icily beautiful nation of Iceland.
Yes.
Tell our listeners about the plot of this intriguing film.
Well, it's I don't want to give too much away because spoilers, you know.
Yeah.
We have to avoid those. But it's set at the end of the 19th century, and the lead is a Danish priest is sent to a remote part of Iceland, and the deeper that he travels into the Icelandic landscape, the more he begins to lose sense of his own reality and even his mission, you know, as a priest and his sense of duty. These all begin to come into question and become troubled as he travels deeper and deeper into the Icelandic wilderness.
Mm. I can just imagine what a feast for the eyes.
It's beautiful. Cinematography is terrific. I mean, one of the things that I'm really excited about the entire series, and this probably comes from my own interest in filmmaking, is that I think the cinematography in each one of these films is striking, and you know, for various different reasons. For instance, you know, the film that's next in the series, The Zone of Interest, looks radically different than Godland. Of course, Godland takes advantage of the natural landscapes in order to heighten the drama.
Right, that vast we might think of it as the emptiness of Iceland.
Oh, but it's not. It's beautiful.
Of course, absolutely. So that is Godland, the weekend of October 10th through the 13th. After that, then a film that is very intriguing as well, a film from Great Britain called The Zone of Interest. And there are a couple of points of interest that surround the screening of this film the weekend of October 24th.
Absolutely. And I want to start by saying, you know, this film won the Academy Award for good reason. Jonathan Glazer, of course, is an extremely talented filmmaker known for, you know, films like Sexy Beast and Under the Skin. But this film, Zone of Interest, is, I think, a remarkable achievement, both visually, but more importantly, in terms of sound. The story takes place at a house, the home of the Auschwitz commandant, Rudolf Huss, and his wife, Hedwig. And they live in this house that's right next door. There's a wall that separates them from the concentration camp. And, of course, everything on their side is flowers and green grass. And they try to go about their lives, you know, creating a family and a home and garden, et cetera. Meanwhile, we hear these horrendous sounds of gunshots and screams. And it's a brutal film, but it's also, I think, an extremely important film about complicity. And you know, the complicity that people have for, you know, the activities that go on around them. And yes, on the 24th, which is the Thursday evening, the first evening of the run of the film at the series, we will be having a talkback following the film. It will be myself, my colleagues in the English department, Mary Leonard and Joseph Benson, both of whom have taught courses in Holocaust literature. And so they will be joining me to discuss the film on, you know, multiple levels.
Fantastic. Again, that is the Oscar-winning film, The Zone of Interest, that will be screened the weekend of October 24th through the 27th. And by the way, I think this is also as good a time as any to remind people that these films are not available a la carte, one at a time.
Yes.
One needs to subscribe to the entire season. And again, it's for the ridiculously low price of $30 to gain entry to all 12 of these marvelous films. But so even if your interest is piqued for a particular film, like The Zone of Interest, for instance, you do need to subscribe to the entire season in order to be able to view The Zone of Interest in this way.
It's less than $3 a movie.
Incredible. Incredible. Next is another film that I am very, very curious about, a film from Japan called Monster.
Yes, Monster, by the extremely gifted filmmaker Hirokazu Koreeda, who is actually, you know, I cut my teeth writing about Japanese cinema. And Koreeda is a filmmaker I've encountered sort of tangential to my own research, but someone whose films I think are remarkably honest. And he is a filmmaker who sort of blends personal drama and very intimate portrayals of his characters with, he blends that with a kind of social realist perspective, where he looks at social problems. And Monster deals with a mother who is suspicious and demands answers from her son's teacher when her son begins acting strangely. Let's put it that way. That's the premise of the film. You know, from there, he explores multiple aspects of contemporary Japanese life.
Very good. So that is Monster from Japan, November 7th through the 10th. 2 weeks later is a film from Germany called Anselm. And I was trying to glean from the summary, is this a documentary
yes,
film?
Yes, it is. Actually, okay. We have two films by Wim Wenders this season. Anselm is the first Wim Wenders film that we'll be showing, and then we'll also be looking at his film Perfect Days. But that comes a little bit later. That's not until March. But that is a fiction film. The film that we're looking at right now, Anselm, is a documentary of the artist Anselm Kiefer. And it's a film that looks at the line between film and painting as art forms. You know, because they are both graphic arts. They both are pictorial representations of what, you know, the world around us. Of course, one is more immediate, you know, grounded in photography, you know, et cetera, and the other is a little bit more abstracted. Though I would argue that one of the great things about film, particularly in the digital age, is that we can start to modify images and try to maybe in some ways return some of the aspects of painting that has been lost, some of the abstraction of painting that's been lost. But I'm a big fan of films that that look at and talk about art forms together with one another. And certainly painting, again, being, you know, visual, all about, you know, composition and you know, portraying light and shadow and that sort of thing. I mean, I think it lends itself to an exploration like Anselm.
Fantastic. So Anselm Kiefer would be an artist in which those lines are blurred between,
yes,
between film and painting. And,
yes, and life and work. His work and his life get blended together as well, interestingly. Yeah.
So Anselm will be screened November 21st through the 24th. Then to the first weekend in December, and what sounds like a high-energy film from Pakistan called Joyland.
Joyland, yes. It's a film about a Pakistani family, and their youngest son takes a job as a backup dancer and a Bollywood-style burlesque, and he becomes infatuated with a trans woman who actually runs the entire show. And so his love and adoration for her drives much of the narrative.
And I'm guessing that some of these developments occurred to the bewilderment of his
traditional Pakistani family. Yes, absolutely.
So an interesting clash of cultures is probably part of this film, Joyland,
yes.
December 5th through the 8th. After that, then, as we head into the next year, so to 2025 and February 6th through 9th, a film from Italy called Io Capitano.
Yes.
And this intrigues me a lot because it appears not to involve young Italians, but young people from another part of the world.
From Dakar, yes,
yeah.
who are traveling to Europe, so immigrating to Europe, and it's a story that takes on an almost mythical resonance to it as it unfolds. It's Homeric in many ways. It's very much like a classical epic in their development. You know, you have the hero's journey and everything unfolding within this narrative. But it's also, this is one that I have not seen yet. Hmm. And I'm really, really anxious to see it because Matteo Garrone is a filmmaker whose earlier film, Gomorrah, which is a take on to call it a gangster film almost feels like I'm doing it, a disservice, but it takes elements of the gangster film genre and tells a very realistic, again, almost a social problem kind of story about life in a particular section of Italy. So
very good
Italian life, yeah, but a very specific, limited to organized crime.
Interesting. So this film, Io Capitano, again, will screen February 6th through the 9th.
Yes, and it's an amazing journey that these characters undertake.
2 weeks later, a film from Australia called The Royal Hotel.
Yes, by Kitty Green, the Australian filmmaker. And this is an interesting film where the adventure that these two backpackers, one named Hannah and one named Liv, go on is one that begins in a remote Australian pub, and they take a job there to get some extra cash, and they're confronted with a group of unruly locals. And as they try to negotiate their way through this conflict, things rapidly leap out of their control and spiral out from there. It's a really suspenseful and very visually interesting film.
Right, and of course, just the fact that they are in a remote location, presumably far out of reach of standard law enforcement and so
yes,
on.
Yes, they are. Yes, I'm sorry.
It places them in some peril is all I wanted to say.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah. So from Australia, The Royal Hotel, February 20th through the 23rd. Then what looks to be a beautiful film from the nation of Ethiopia.
Yes, this is the film that I'm most excited to be screening this season. This is a film that I've wanted to screen if I ever had the opportunity. And it's a film from a couple of years ago, from 2021, by Jessica Bashir, who grew up in Ethiopia and has returned to Ethiopia to make this film. And it's an interesting movie because it's sort of hallucinogenic in its approach, and it's very rapturously beautiful in its compositions. I mean, it's in black and white, and it's glorious, glorious black and white, extremely beautiful, high contrast, chiaroscuro lighting at times. I mean, it's rapturous in terms of its visuals, and it's the story of this community who immerse themselves in rituals of khat, which is a leaf that Sufi Muslims have chewed for centuries for religious meditations, and it's actually Ethiopia's biggest cash crop. This leaf and the rituals surrounding it. And one of the things I think is great is that as a film that sort of mixes hallucinogenic kind of imagery with sort of traditional chiaroscuro compositions. I mean, it's just beautiful.
Yeah, sounds like it. So this is March 6th through the 9th. After that, then, comes a film from the aforementioned German filmmaker Wim Wenders called Perfect Days.
Yes.
Tell us about this.
Perfect Days. It's a very heartwarming film. I would describe it. It's a film about a man named Hirayama who cleans public toilets in Tokyo for a living, and you know, he lives his daily life in a kind of simplistic way that brings him great peace. But he also encounters a number of characters throughout his day. And the characters that he encounters, he has transformative, I would call them transformative interactions with them.
Interesting.
Yes, so, interesting. And the fiction film, to complement the documentary we have earlier in the season.
Very good. Again, Perfect Days, March 20th through the 23rd. Whew, this is really interesting, this next film from France, which is called The Beast. So here's a taste of science fiction and something that sounds to be pretty disturbing and fascinating.
Yes, it is, actually. I've watched it three times already, and it's great. Bertrand Bonello is the director, and the film is actually an adaptation of the Henry James short story, The Beast in the Jungle. Obviously a very liberal adaptation of the Henry James short story, though parts of the tale do take place in the fin de siècle period, in the late 19th century. But we have a second story that is basically a triptych, a second story all starring Lydia Seydoux, the actress, The second story is a more contemporary story about a woman who gets sort of menaced by an incel. I don't know if I would call him an admirer, but basically a stalker. The film embraces some of the genre tropes of the horror film at that point. And then the final third takes place in a virtual reality future. So that takes on science fiction, right? Okay. So we have a kind of period piece, a horror narrative, and a science fiction film all in one. And it's beautifully done. And it raises all sorts of questions about identity and what is real. And it's a terrific film.
Wow. So The Beast from France, that will be screened April 10th through the 13th. The current season finishes out April 17th through the 20th with the screening of another film from Germany called A Fire.
Yes, and this is the latest film from Christian Petzold, and Petzold is an extremely prolific filmmaker. He's, I believe his film Phoenix played at the Foreign Film Festival maybe not last year, might have been the year before. This particular film deals with a group of friends, a group of 20-somethings, who are on holiday in their holiday home, which is on the Baltic Sea. And there is a fire that's burning out of control in the lands not too far from them. And of course, you know, the idea is that, you know, there's a fire burning, but within their own interpersonal relationships, there's all sorts of mini fires that are burning as well. And so we have this sort of potential of an encroaching disaster on the horizon as these young people, these friends, gather and emotions run high.
Great scenario. Yes. A Fire. April 17th through the 20th, that rounds out then this series of 12 foreign films in all that are going to be screened at the University of Wisconsin Parkside. Explain to our listeners a matter that I touched on very briefly, but we didn't explore, namely the whole matter of foreign films that are dubbed versus foreign films in which we see English subtitles versus probably some foreign films in which there isn't any of that at all, and
at
they're
all.
taken entirely on their own. So tell us what we see as part of this series.
Well, what we'll be seeing is subtitles, and I prefer subtitles, obviously, to dubbing, because with subtitles you hear the original articulations of the lines, right? You hear the actor's performance, and you know, yeah, you can try to replicate that, but I mean, dubbing, it's not the same as synchronous sound recording. You know, you're always going to have the mouth moving slightly differently from the voiceover, and it's never quite matches up, and it's always a little bit disappointing. I feel this way whether I'm watching something that's live action or animated. I know a lot of animated stuff gets dubbed pretty regularly, but for me, subtitles is the way to see it. Now, I teach a lot of young people cinema studies, and sometimes the responses I get is that they have difficulty or experience difficulty watching the film because they feel they're volleying their eyes between the image on the screen and listening to, you know, the sound of the characters, you know, dialogue, but then having to read the dialogue creates a kind of for them a little bit of a discomforting disconnect. But you know, I find that is actually decreasing, because I think a lot of people now watch television with subtitles on, you know, and you know, of course, you know, many times they're watching something that's in the same language as the subtitle, in English in this particular case, but they become used to, I think, or are becoming used to the volley between the two with the eyes, you know, having to raise it and lower it.
Sure. And of course, that would be it's a little bigger issue when you're talking about a large screen versus just the screen on your phone or even the screen on your laptop or whatever. But yeah, you just have to do it a bit and you grow accustomed to it.
You don't even notice it after a while. You can't tell, you know, you can kind of take in the entire screen at once.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. So in a nutshell, where is it that you go in search of foreign films? What sort of resources are out there? I mean, are there organizations who exist solely to share foreign films with entities like UW Parkside?
Oh, I wish. Well, there are of course companies that you can rent films from. I think the best way to become knowledgeable about foreign films is to take advantage of every opportunity you have, whether it's through a streaming service or whether it's, you know, through, you know, the internet, you know, trying to find access to films. I've found films both online as well as, you know, as well as through theatrical distribution. I also read quite vigorously about international cinema. So I read journals like Film Comment and the British journal Sight and Sound, which is, you know, they're commercial journals. I mean, they're made to sell and market the films to audiences, but they tend to deal with foreign films a lot more frequently than you would get in, say, Variety or Entertainment Weekly, which may focus on a film like The Zone of Interest, which, you know, gained a lot of notoriety and that sort of thing. But I think if you're really looking to expand your knowledge of foreign film, that's a great way to do it. There's also great online resources. There's a site called worldcinema.org, which is dedicated to world cinema.
Very good. Well, it sounds like you and Professor Benson have assembled an exceptionally fine lineup of foreign films for this current season, again, with the first screenings coming this coming weekend.
Yes.
Remind our listeners all of the information in terms of if they are excited to see any or all of these foreign films, how does one go about obtaining a subscription?
Well, you would visit the foreign film website, foreign film series website at the University of Wisconsin Parkside. So you would go to the University of Wisconsin Parkside's main page, www.uwp.edu, and just in the search bar, just type foreign film series. That's what I do. It takes you right to the first link that it takes you to. And that's where you can go to get specific information, as well as a list, and we have an archive of every film that we've ever shown.
Oh.
Yeah, by director, by country, by title. It's pretty cool, and that's part of the website that I spend the most time on, just because I'm like, what else did you show by Godard? You know, what else did you, you know? So it's again $30 for the entire season plus three guest passes. So it's like $2.30 or something a ticket. You can pay online. You can purchase a subscription. There's a button that you click to purchase your subscription online. It's usually done through a will call, so you'll have the tickets waiting for you at the cinema. And of course, as I mentioned, students are admitted free with Parkside ID on Sundays for their screening at 3 o'clock. You can also pay by check, and there is a form that you can print out and mail directly to the Foreign Film Series. I know a lot of our subscribers prefer to do it that way than to enter their information online, and that's perfectly all right. And we offer this as well. And of course, you can always switch, you know, showtimes. You know, if you want to go on Saturday but you have tickets for Thursday, just go on Saturday.
There you go.
Yeah. Absolutely.
A great opportunity for everybody. Dr. Jay McCroy from UW Parkside, thank you so much for joining me today
thank
on the Morning Show.
Thank you for having me.
Great to have you here. You're listening to the Thursday Morning Show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. To finish out today's program, we're going to be talking about what promises to be an absolutely magnificent organ recital that is coming up this Sunday afternoon at 4 o'clock at St. Mary's Lutheran Church. It is part of a weekend of celebratory events kicking off their observance of their 150th anniversary. And this recital Sunday afternoon is going to be presented by Brian Schottler, who has a long connection with St. Mary's Lutheran Church, happens to be a Carthage graduate, one of the most distinguished music graduates that Carthage has ever had. And he has gone on to a really wonderful career, which includes, at the moment, his position as Minister of Music and Organist at First United Methodist Church in Evanston, Illinois. And he is chair of the organ department at the Music Institute of Chicago. And we should call him Dr. Schottler because of his doctoral degree from Eastman School of Music. And he has put together what looks like an absolutely beautiful program. And this is a concert that is free and open to the public. And I'm delighted to be able to reconnect with Brian Schottler to hear a little bit about his connection to St. Mary's Lutheran Church and about the program that he has put together for Sunday afternoon. Brian Schottler, we welcome you back to the Morning Show.
Well, thanks for having me on.
It's so gratifying to see all of the great success that you have enjoyed, that your talents and hard work have taken you into some really exciting successes. In the biographical notes for your program, you make mention of the fact that your own connection to St. Mary's Lutheran Church extends back four generations, if I remember correctly. Tell us more about that.
Yeah, my family came over from Denmark in the early 1900s, and as soon as they immigrated, they joined the church, which was the Danish Lutheran Church here in town, which was St. Mary's Lutheran. And so I'm a fourth generation. I grew up in the church, was baptized there, confirmed there, and actually got to work there in the music ministry in high school and college.
I know that you worked for some time there with Minister of Music Linda Schmidt, who is so warmly remembered for the great work that she did there. And you've been blessed to have a whole host of terrific mentors over the years. And this program that you have put together for Sunday afternoon looks absolutely wonderful. Before we talk specifically about what you're going to play, tell us a little bit about kind of what you think about in terms of putting a program together. I mean, what sorts of matters are you sort of weighing and balancing? And with a whole universe of repertoire available to you, how do you come up with just the right program for this particular occasion?
Mm-hmm. Well, this program's a little bit unique. I'm trying to nod to several aspects of the church's anniversary, but within that create a balanced program that's enjoyable to listen to, especially for those who might have never attended an organ concert. They may have heard the organ in a worship service, but never attended a full 60-minute marathon, if you will, of organ music. And so rather than programming a whole organ symphony or a big, long tone poem or long romantic through composed work that is 15 minutes of dense counterpoint, I selected several works and grouped them. So we have almost a bite-sized sampler platter, if you will, of of different genres of organ music dating back from the Baroque. The program will begin with works by Johann Sebastian Bach and one of his teachers, Dietrich Buxtehude. And then I'll go into another section of works based on chorale preludes. These are German tunes, at least a few of them, but arranged by several significant composers, including Brahms and Ralph Vaughan Williams, composers that are well known outside of church music, that's found great purpose and in these chorales to turn them into larger works of art. And then the last section of the program will be works that were inspired by the composers of France. We'll hear one, the 20th century organist of Notre Dame in Paris, Louis Vierne, a blind organ virtuoso who wrote so many works. We'll hear the last movement of his first symphony. But then after, actually preceding that, we'll hear two works by American composers that were inspired by that French tradition. One is Seth Bingham. We'll hear his piece, The Rhythmic Trumpet, from his collection Baroques, which was originally dedicated to the American organ virtuoso E. Power Biggs, one of the great ambassadors for the pipe organ, along with Virgil Fox, in the 20th century in America. And then the other piece inspired by the French tradition is by Florence Price, who is the first female African-American symphonist. Her symphony was premiered by the Chicago Symphony Orchestra in the 1930s. And she herself played the organ and studied with French organist Alexandra Guillemot, who taught at the Paris Conservatory. And so I'll be playing two movements from her suite number one, an air and a toccata, and you'll hear elements of the jazz era of the 20s and 30s. She composed this work around the 1940s, but you'll hear several of those elements in that work as well.
Of everything on the program, that excites me especially only because of a couple of different voice students at Carthage who have explored the songs of Florence Price. And and as especially the world of vocal music tries to extend its embrace of certain voices that have been kind of shut off to the side a bit, there is renewed interest in the beautiful songs, art songs, of Florence Price and a lot of her other music as well. So this is a really exciting and intriguing part of your program. I also want to make sure that you say an additional word about your central section with the four chorales, because you have chosen four chorales not just because each is a beautiful piece of music, but because of what they collectively represent.
Yes. During the church's anniversary, we'll be highlighting several elements of our worship space as well. And we have some beautiful stained glass at the front, and I know that will be highlighted in another program. And a lesser known piece of our church, the entryways at the back, there's some etched glass on each side of the doors that are they're crosses, but within them are themes of winter, spring, summer, and fall. Something you could easily walk past on any given day, but having grown up and practiced countless days and nights in that church, these are little touches that the builders of the church included that I wanted to kind of highlight and nod to and influence my programming. So yes, the first of the four chorales will be based on winter, so Aloha Rose by Brahms, and then the second one, spring, thinking of Easter, Lest du uns erfreuen, which is all creatures of our God and King. There's so many texts that have been set to that tune. Rosa Medra, a Welsh hymn tune that has been set by Ralph Vaughan Williams, played at many weddings, so I put that in the summer category. And then the last chorale for fall, Now Think We All Are God, a hymn we certainly hear around Thanksgiving.
Fantastic.
But even though there's a element of sacred in this program, this is really music for everyone. Mm. A chance to hear this great pipe organ. Kenosha's got several great pipe organs, certainly at Carthage. St. Matthew's Episcopal Church has a wonderful E.M. Skinner organ. The Methodist Church on Sheridan Road and their Aeolian organ. And we have a Moeller organ. Moeller touted that they often built an organ a day. They turned out so many organs in the midst of their company's career. And our organ has three keyboards, which I'll be playing, 1,700 pipes, and 27 ranks. And what I like to tell people is that like having an orchestra of 27 players at your disposal every morning or anytime the organ's played. So it's a great chance for everyone to hear all these different sounds that the organ can make.
And I'm curious, is it a little bit like riding a bike when you find your way back to Kenosha and back to St. Mary's and get on the bench of this organ that you've played, of course, countless times over the years, but do not play now, of course, as a regular on a regular basis? What
sure.
does it feel like to be back up in that balcony and playing this organ again?
Yeah, lots of good memories, especially to be in that space. Again, I can't tell you how many countless hours. That's, you know, many musicians, you know, have a small practice room where they're locked up to do their woodshedding and learn their notes and work with the metronome. And for us organists, often the practice room is the large nave of the church. Yeah. So, yes, it's great to be back on that bench. This is one of those organs that has memory levels where I can save all of my settings. And so it's so funny that I've got memory levels in that organ that I've been using since I was in middle school.
Wow.
So it's great to be back.
Fantastic. Brian Schottler will be playing a organ recital this Sunday afternoon, September 29th, 4 p.m. at St. Mary's Lutheran Church. That's at 2001 80th Street. This free recital, open to the public, is part of the congregation's 150th anniversary celebration. Brian Schottler, it is great to speak with you again. Best wishes to you in all of your musical endeavors, and especially this recital coming up Sunday afternoon.
Thank you, Greg.
Tomorrow on The Morning Show, we speak to the author of a book about bipartisanship called Across the Aisle. And coming up on Monday, a preview of the next American Experience documentary called The American Vice President. And we've been having technical trouble with our Morning Show archive on our website, WGTD.org. We believe those technical problems have been rectified, and shortly those missing interviews should be restored to the archive. Watch for that over the next couple of days. Today, sunny skies Mild temperatures, a high temperature today of 75 degrees. Overnight low of 58. Tomorrow's high, 76 degrees, again under mostly sunny skies. Sunshine is actually promised, along with very comfortable temperatures all through the weekend and even cooler temperatures expected early next week. This is WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake.